Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one, because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, the podcast where we don't laugh at me, where we reminisce about something, about geeky challenges with our ungeeky beer. I'm Tim.
And I'm Frank.
Hey, what are we drinking today, Frank?
We are drinking George Killian's Irish Red.
It's the worst Irish accent I've ever heard.
It wasn't meant to be Irish. George Killian's Irish Red. After me, Lucky Charms.
That was stereo. Yeah, no, all right. Yeah, racist. Yeah.
We're Killian's Irish Red, kind of an old classic, a go-to. Product of the USA. Made in America.
Really?
That's what it says. Product of the USA.
Well, now I'm confused.
Yeah, well, take it up with George Killian.
I will. But it's good.
Yes,
I'm a big fan of the horse on the front.
Yeah, yeah. It's brewed in the Irish tradition, and that's why there's a horse there for you know, reasons.
So they brew it and drink it at the same time?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That sounds good.
The Irish tradition. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Oh, that's the only way I can get into an Irish accent. I have to say that. Otherwise, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm Irish, so it's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Goodness for that. Fun fact, my family comes from Ireland, comes from a long line of kings, one of the first five kings of Ireland.
So let's recap. If you've been listening to Tim's history of Tim,
yeah.
Other than being afraid of horror movies and never seeing Jurassic Park all the way through the theater, he has run. His family has run away from French
Henry the Second, yeah.
And they were also Irish kings. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
It's just all over the place.
I know. And here I am, somewhere.
Sitting somewhere.
Not going to tell you where.
In front of a MacBook Air,
mm-hmm.
Recording a podcast.
It's going to be awesome. You know what?
Superman.
Yeah, I was going to say we're 2 minutes into this episode. I haven't even talked about.
Told anybody.
No.
They hate us so much.
I only get 30 minutes of this show.
The title doesn't even tell me what you're talking about. So
what does that even mean?
Yeah. And so I was going to talk about the Fleischer cartoons.
Now, you know, I think we should name this episode. This one is about the Fleischer cartoons. When they hear that, they're going to be like, what? But it tells exactly what it's about.
Yeah, this is stupid. Yeah, I hate you.
Superman Fleischer cartoons.
If you were unaware of these were, they were eight shorts created from, what was it?
17 40 shorts. 17.
There were eight. That's right. Okay,
yeah,
never mind.
They went back and did more, but yes.
Okay. You know what? You're the expert.
I didn't mean to. No, you can.
No, it's fine, Frank. Oh,
God.
Really?
Oh, God. Never.
Really?
When they say it's fine, it's never.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
It's fine. It's good for you.
All right, go ahead.
All right. If you insist. So in the late 30s, early 40s, Superman came on the scene in 38. And
May of 38.
May of 38.
Come on.
Yeah.
Action Comics number one.
Mm-hmm.
He's 76.
I know.
Believe trombones at the big parade. Anyway, wow. Sorry.
It's going to be a rough episode, guys.
Yeah.
So that was, May of 38 was when he took the scene. But the character quickly became very, very popular. And it went from, you know, having debuted in Action Comics and was the first character to have its own dedicated comic book about one character, Superman number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it exploded. The 1939 World's Fair.
Exploded like Krypton.
Exactly. 1939 World's Fair, there was somebody there in person dressed up as Superman. There was a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And before you knew it, 1941, Paramount Studios and Max Fleischer came out with a series of cartoon shorts that would air. You know, if you went to the movies, you would see a cartoon short and then a newsreel and then the feature presentation. And so this was the cartoon short that would show before many Paramount Studios productions. And these are very, very high quality.
Expensive
for the time. I think it was something like $1 million budgets in today's dollars.
Yeah. For how long is each one? Runtime?
Like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Like they're fairly, I mean, they're short. It's a lot of money to put towards a short
thing.
So,
yeah.
Nowadays that's nothing, but you know, it still was quite, it was
for then.
Yeah. For then they were $100,000, budget, but in 1940 dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think today, yeah, it comes to about $1 million, something crazy like that.
You said it was $100,000?
$100,000, yeah, in 1940s dollars. So they started in 1941, and they ran for a couple of years throughout the war. They used the same voice actors from the radio serials. So in addition to all the other stuff that I mentioned, there was a radio show, and they took the same actors and put them in the cartoons to be voice actors for the cartoons. And these are just revered still to this day as some of the highest quality animation, you know, all hand drawn, obviously, for that time. Beautiful, gorgeous versions of these characters. Do you have the conversion on the money?
Yeah, it's about $1,250,000.
So $1.25 million, $1.25 million
on a 15-minute cartoon.
15-minute cartoon, yeah, mm-hmm. That's a lot. Definitely a lot. And during the war, when there was, you know, a shortage of everything and coming right out of the Depression, that's considerable.
It's definitely a lot of
considerable
money.
Yeah. So these cartoons actually, you know, fast forwarding quite a bit, these were some of the aesthetically anyway the inspiration for the Batman animated series of the 90s.
Yes, extreme.
Yeah.
Extremely.
Yeah, the whole Art Deco look and everything, mm-hmm. comes directly from this. Bruce Timm was very much inspired by
it. It's how I imagine New York or Metropolis looked, yeah. in the 1940s.
Yeah, exactly.
When I go over to that major metropolitan city, or any major metropolitan city, and I see like one Art Deco building, I'm like, yes! Yes!
I know.
All buildings should look like this.
Honestly, that's probably true. Yeah, I love the look of these cartoons. Mm-hmm. So do you remember when you first saw them?
Yeah, we had tapes. It was my first introduction to Superman, actually.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was either these cartoons or the George Reeves episode of I Love Lucy, which, mm-hmm. we've talked about, mm-hmm. before. It was one or the other. I'm not sure which, but we had tapes of them. Okay. And so, cause I'm sure you could get them in like a dollar
bin. Grocery stores, yeah.
Yeah. And they were, it was just the Superman cartoons. And so it didn't have anything else attached to it, which I liked. And so, lost my train of thought again.
So you had the VHS.
Yeah. So we had, it was, I'm trying to think, the first one I ever saw was the Mad Scientist.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was that Mad Scientist was the one with the comet, right? When he like punches the laser beam.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the one.
That was the first one I ever saw, which was the first one.
That's the first one, yeah, which is, it's the technical name for it is just Superman.
No, lies. The Magnetic Telescope.
Oh, that was the first one.
Yeah, isn't that, that's the one where he punches the beam.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yep. The Mad Scientist is the volcano exploding.
Yes,
which I also saw. Yes. But the Magnetic Telescope was my first one. No, the volcano was a different one entirely.
The names are kind of all,
they all run together.
Yeah,
but I can tell you my favorite one.
Okay,
yeah, my favorite one is the Mechanical Monsters.
I love that one.
Yeah, the big robots coming into Metropolis, because they were just, it's a lot of classic Superman.
Yes.
In like what we consider classic Superman, they consider brand new Superman.
Right.
In there. Changing in the phone booth, like out in the middle of the day, punching, yep. giant robots in the street. Like that's Superman.
Yes.
Like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I do, even today, like if I sit down and watch one of these 15 minutes, I can sit through and watch most of them and enjoy them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not exactly like a lot of character development or anything like that. It's always like Lois Lane getting into trouble.
Right.
And then Superman being like, oh, I've saved you, Lois. And then,
yeah, exactly.
and then she makes some comment. And he's like, oh, well, we'll see about that. Wink at the camera. End episode. Yeah.
Maybe if I was a Superman. Man. Yeah. Something like that.
Oh, Clark. Yeah. Wink.
Cowardly Clark.
Yeah.
You know, actually, I'm looking more carefully. These were all under 10 minutes. They were all 10 minutes.
You
know, or less,
when you said 15 minutes, I knew that felt,
yeah,
sounded long.
I realized that was wrong, mainly because I think back on it. I had, like you, I had them on VHS. I had a couple different versions of them, though. I had like my dad would be like, oh, I see the Superman tape, but it has a different cover than I recognize in the supermarket. Let me buy this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these cartoons are in the public domain now, which means that no one owns the rights to these cartoons.
Right.
Warner Brothers owns the characters, obviously.
The Siegel and Schuster families.
Siegel
and
Schuster. Well,
or yeah. Is it really just the Siegel really, families? Really, or is it Schuster?
Well, Warner actually owns them. But,
right.
But they pay out dividends too.
To the
families, yeah.
Yeah.
While they own the characters, they don't own the intellectual property of these cartoons. So these cartoons, some of them are in the public domain, and they are, which means that anybody who wants to can package them and ship them out and sell them.
We should package them and ship them out.
We could if we wanted to. They're on the Internet Archive, archive.org, if you want to watch them for free, legally and for free. They're on archive.org. You can watch them there. A number of them are there. So they're reissued over and over and over again, back then on VHS, now on DVD and Blu-ray, over and over again by different companies. And, you know, they vary in quality because anybody can just, like, if you wanted to.
You've seen them in Blu-ray, though, right?
I have seen them.
They're amazing. They're amazing. They yeah. still look amazing.
They were remastered, but there are crappy versions of them out there. And I had many crappy versions. Yeah. Because my dad would see it and be like, oh, it's a new Superman thing. Frank will like this. And it was the same ones again. He didn't realize it. Different cover, different company, issuing the same cartoons again. But finally, I got this 50th anniversary edition on VHS. It was all 17 cartoons and one tape.
Hmm.
I don't know how they fit it on there. It must have been like
a really big tape.
It must have been like, yeah, 4 hour speed or something. Or 6 hour speed, I guess. But oh man, glorious to have all of them in one tape. And I actually, that is the one tape I can say I actually wore it out. I broke that tape from watching.
Did you really?
Watched it so much, wore it right out, broke the tape. I was heartbroken when it happened. Of course, I got a replacement.
Heartbroken, like the tape was broken.
Yeah. And then eventually I got the DVDs and that looked beautiful. And now I've seen the Blu-ray and it's also beautiful, but it's not. So the DVD was a Warner Brothers
release. That's right.
Remastered it and did it really. I don't think the Blu-ray is.
Mm-mm.
The Blu-ray is. They did a very nice job with it, but I don't think it's from the original masters. I don't believe anyway. I think they probably took the Warner Brothers DVD and upscaled it to Blu-ray. But boy, does it look great! This is where things like Superman flying came from.
That's right. Because they couldn't. Because no, you're wrong.
Am I wrong?
You're wrong. I know something about Superman you don't know.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Hit me. Superman could leap tall buildings with a single bound.
Right.
And even... He could not fly. He could fly starting in the radio show because it was more dramatic.
Okay.
And they had to make it dramatic for the radio show, so they switched it to flat out flying for the radio show. And then the Fleischer cartoons picked up the rest of it afterwards.
Okay.
I believe.
I have listened to the first several seasons of the radio show, and I have watched all the cartoons, obviously. I did not watch them, obviously, in the same timeline that they happened, right?
Right.
So you could very well be right about that. I could be wrong. What I remember reading, and I'm fully, if I'm wrong, I'm happy to be wrong.
Yeah, me too. I'm fully aware that I might be wrong.
If that's the case, what I read was that they started in the cartoons because it was easier to animate flight, you know, like the looping background of him flying.
Then leaping.
But the first couple of cartoons, I remember him leaping. Like the dinosaur one.
Yes.
Remember
the dinosaur gets loose.
Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a dinosaur that they find in like Antarctica. They bring it to the museum.
That one just spoke to me so much as a child.
One, yeah. And the dinosaur.
The Arctic
ice,
giant.
Arctic giant.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs on ice. The coolant system fails. The dinosaur gets loose and starts destroying everything, and Superman has to save the day. And that one, he leaps around to chase the dinosaur and stop it. That's a great one. But yeah, so the flight thing, I guess I'm not sure. And I have read kind of different things saying, you know, different places.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the truth is somewhere buried, even though this is something that should be pretty well documented.
It's not.
It's hard to piece it together.
Yeah. Well, either way, it's definitely one influenced the other in any way.
Yeah.
And so, because the radio show was, I mean, incredibly influential.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
You know, radio show was Kryptonite, right?
Yeah. Kryptonite and Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, and Jimmy, I knew that.
Came from the radio show, yeah.
That's right. Are you a fan of the Fleischer Superman suit?
Yes, I am. I mean, I wouldn't really necessarily want it today. But I love the look. It has like the black background on, and a red S.
Yeah, and the yellow outline of the crest.
Yeah, yellow outline, black background, red S. Other than that, pretty standard. I think there's no S on the cape.
No, there wasn't. Yeah. Well, to animate the S on the cape, besides, I don't think... I want to say that, actually, I think even in Superman Returns, they took the S off the back of the cape because it was too hard to CG.
Yeah.
It wasn't worth it for them.
But, yeah, no, I do like that suit. What I really love from that series, though, more than anything, you know, I love the animation itself. I love the suit.
It is gorgeous animation.
It's beautiful animation. Yeah. And to think that someone drew that by hand, like, it's just
I know.
Amazing.
You could just loop it over and over and over again.
You
could,
couldn't you? Yeah. I really love the music. Sammy Timberg's theme for that show, for those films, is iconic. I feel like it's still in the public consciousness today to an extent.
Look up in the sky.
Well, there's that, which started with the radio show and then came to
our radio show.
The music itself, bum ba dum,
Superman, 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 Superman.
Yeah. That I feel like, even if people don't know that they know it, people still like, I don't know. There's just still sort of a trope, something Superman. Like that's
Not even the rest of the song. It's just the Superman. Song. Yeah,
and that has stayed, and that has kind of gone through lots of generations of Superman themes.
Just people calling Superman.
Yeah, but like.
Even Ursa kind of does it. Superman. Superman. Superman, Superman, Superman.
Stop it. I'm going to throw a cellophane S at you.
Oh, you wouldn't. You'd take away my powers, then push me down in an Arctic shaft.
I'll show you my Arctic giant.
All right. What's your favorite episode?
I think my favorite is the first one, the Superman one with the mad scientist. It is unofficially known as the Mad Scientist now, but I love that because it's the only one that shows the whole the origin of Krypton and everything, and the Krypton exploding and everything. It recaps it in like 60 seconds or something. The whole thing,
yeah, barely even.
Yeah. Like super super quick. And then he's there. He's out there. He's saving people immediately. So I love that one. Mechanical Monsters though is a big favorite of mine as well.
It's great. Yeah. Just something about Superman punching robots that I'm just a really big fan of.
So great.
Yeah.
So great. And then the magnetic telescope as well.
Yeah.
Top three. Okay. That rounds out my top three.
Yeah. I think those are a lot of everyone's.
Those are, I think, the most. So those were like among the first batch, right? So there's that first batch of eight that were really high quality, really high budget.
They were.
$1,000 budget.
Yeah.
Then they moved from Fleischer Studios to Famous Studios. I think one of the Fleischer brothers left. Now, the Fleischers, by the way, just in case you maybe you do know this, maybe you don't know this, the Fleischers were also responsible for the early Popeye cartoons, the Betty Boop cartoons, number of very popular cartoons of the day. So this was a well-known, well-oiled machine. One of the Fleischer brothers, they had a falling out, and so they became Famous Studios. Mm-hmm. The budget was lowered to $50,000. Per episode. So, you know, we're still dealing.
It's half.
It's half. We're still dealing with a lot of money, but it's half of what it was
right.
to make the same product.
Well, so you're trying to pay your rent, and let's say you pay $1,000, yeah, exactly. and you make $2,000 a month, and you're like, now you only make $1,000.
Right.
Good luck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it was tough. They still managed to keep a pretty high level of quality. It's a noticeable difference. You know, they cut a little bit of corners, cut some corners, but by and large, still very high quality, beautiful cartoons. The second half of them, though, you know, after the eighth one, and they went on to the second half, the stories are not as good. The animation is still very good, but the stories start to get just very, very war propaganda.
But there's that Japanese one. Japators, yeah.
Yeah.
It hurts. It just hurts so much.
It's pretty racist. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's pretty racist.
Well, even stuff like Jungle Drums is still like insensitive.
The Mummy one.
Yeah. They're like, just very like. It's just.
For the time,
it's considered okay.
If you look at it through the lens of history, you know, it was of the time. It was fine.
I look at everything through the lens of history. Even like. Racist comments make a half an hour ago. I'm looking through the lens of history.
At the time, I hadn't had this delicious red beer. So what did I. No, but. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Like they're definitely not appropriate by today's standards. But at least some of those, like the ones we just mentioned. But The stories themselves just kind of devolved into this sort of like, there's a monster, or there's a, like, it became very much like monster movies. Mm-hmm. Maybe influenced by the Universal monster movies to some extent. I don't know.
Well, it was around the same time. So the same time. Like, hop I'm on thinking, that bandwagon yeah. when you can.
Yeah. Yeah. So know? I don't know. But there was definitely sort of like, it, they became sort of very one note and just sort of like, Clark and Lois are in some exotic place. Some monster thing comes out of nowhere and starts attacking Lois. Clark becomes Superman. Superman saves the day. Superman becomes Clark again.
That's true, but I'm gonna argue that even the early ones, it was the same thing.
Okay, true. That's true.
So what is your noticeable difference? My noticeable then?
Difference is that they were all like they were. At the second half, they became a war propaganda machine. So it was like, the Japanese are sabotaging us. Superman's going to save us from these guys. You know, the buck teeth Japanese guys that all mm-hmm. look the same in this cartoon version. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
There was the one where with you know the submarine. The submarine.
Oh, thing. Is that the 11th hour? The 11th
hour. Yeah. So there's a bunch.
Why do I remember these things?
Well, I mean, we grew up watching these, man. So that's why, because for me, they just became propaganda, and less about the art. Mm-hmm. Even though the stories were predictable and comic book stories were like, a dinosaur comes out, Superman has to save everybody. The mad scientist with the telescope, Superman has to save everybody. Like, sure, that part is always going to be there. But
arguably has been there for 76 years.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. But I, it was less about like, the propaganda piece of like, you know, us against them, or like, let's just make sweeping generalizations about that other country.
Yep.
So that they're easier to hate, like that kind of thing.
A tradition we still hold well today. At the beginning of this episode.
Yeah.
We learned from the Fleischer cartoons.
That's right.
Sweeping generalizations about other countries.
What talking about, Timmy boy?
No, to be fair, I really do enjoy the Irish.
So do I.
Yeah, Ireland is a beautiful country. I have been there.
I have not been there. I would very much like to go. My girlfriend's Irish. I love
it. It is gorgeous. I do recommend. It rained every day we were there, which was awesome, except for one. And when the sun came, I was like, "Go away, sun! You belong here. This is Ireland.
Who invited you?
Who
here?
Invited you? Everything is green. You're gonna kill everything now, because that's what the sun does.
Yeah,
kill everything.
That's how yeah. it works.
Sun kills yeah. everything.
Clouds are the source of life.
Yeah. Obviously,
the sun burns them. I love these cartoons. They're very, very highly rewatchable. As a kid,
How do you find the dichotomy between the Superman and the Clark Kent? Do you notice a difference in characterization?
Yeah, we've said this a few times now in recent weeks. I really
his eye squint is the same. He's just wearing glasses. Superman has no pupils.
That's correct.
Except when he uses his X-ray vision
or heat vision. Yeah,
yeah. When his like eyes are like three times the size of his head. Yeah,
yeah. No, but I really think that I really love Bud Collier's portrayal of Clark again, because I love that mild mannered, very capable, very smart. You know, good reporter, good newspaper man.
Yeah, he was not on your superhero draft.
He was.
Well, he wasn't on your pick.
Him.
Yeah.
I didn't pick him. No. I didn't. But I really love... He was the guy who started... Okay, you want to talk about the dichotomy.
Mm.
On the radio show, he came up with the idea that, well, Clark Kent's voice should be up here. And then he'd say, this is a job for Superman, and Superman's voice mm-hmm. is down here.
Yep.
He came up with that idea that that should be a very clear difference. And he put on this high voice... Hi, Chief. Hi, Lois. Blah, blah. And then when he was Superman, he was down here. He did that to illustrate for the radio audience, right? That it was
the two now separate Superman, characters.
Now I'm Clark. Yeah. But this was at a time when Clark was the theory. You know, there's a different theories of Superman, right? There's the theory that Superman is the real guy and Clark is the character, the suit. And then there's the other theory, the more recent, the trend nowadays is
that Clark is the real guy
and Superman is the suit he puts on to go fight crime.
Yeah, or, you know, so the theory now is that Clark is the real guy and right. Superman's the suit.
Right.
Yeah.
At the time, though, it was, no, Superman is the
real guy. Kal-El
is the real guy, and he pretends to be Clark Kent.
Yeah.
I see value to both of those things, but anyway.
I do, too. Yeah. Though, I'm of the opinion of Clark is the real yeah. guy.
I kind of go back and forth. I enjoy both very much. It's hard for me to pick one that I prefer, to be honest.
Well, I like it backwards because... if you're looking at the two big, if you're looking at DC's two biggest, Batman and Superman, mm-hmm. whereas Batman is the real and Bruce is the mask, yeah. I like the difference where Clark is the real and Superman's the mask,
yeah.
where they're just really never on the same page,
yeah.
unless Clark's standing there in a flannel shirt and jeans and Bruce is in his cowl. And then they talk then to him, then they're on the same page. That's, but yeah. even then they're like, so like, do you want to go fight crime or to go to the grocery store? Yeah. you know, like, which one are we doing?
Well, Ma has a rhubarb pie on the windowsill, so.
I smell it from here.
Yeah.
Clark, we're in Antarctica. I know.
I still smell it. Yeah, no, I love that he brought that, that difference of voice to illustrate that difference in the character. And he carried that over into the cartoon, which is kind of fun to see. This is where you started to see, at least for me, it was where I got the idea, like, wow, I want to hop into a phone booth and change my clothes and become Superman.
Now, Frank, I want to talk to you about today's laws.
Oh, okay.
And about stripping naked in public.
Yes.
I think you should go ahead and do this.
Okay, I will.
I think you should find a phone booth.
Okay.
And go ahead and do this.
Well, that's hard to do. But
yeah. That's why I'm giving you permission.
Okay.
Because I know you'll never find a phone booth.
Cool.
Okay.
Hey, wait, I found, what's this? Yes,
no, Frank, no, no.
Oh, okay, I'm going to take off my shirt now.
Yeah, no, Frank, no.
No, but, yeah, so I, that when I was a little kid, that's what I would model it after that. Because of those cartoons. It was those cartoons that I think inspired a lot of kids. And then eventually the George Reeves show and everything, but those cartoons left a lasting impact. And like I said, Bruce Timm, who
eventually. The '90s Batman animated show was heavily influenced by the Art Deco, arguably timeless style, even though timeless is clearly the 1940s.
Well, yeah.
But if you think about the Fleischer cartoons influencing, you could say even the Fleischer cartoons influenced Burton's Batman.
Yes.
Which both influenced the 90s cartoon, which then in turn went on to even influence Fox's Gotham.
Sure.
And so the Fleischer cartoons are still having a lasting impression on people, even if they don't connect the dots that way. It all stems back to those original 17 shorts.
Agreed. I think, I don't know if this is exactly true, but I tend to think that the reason why, to this day, Superman seems to work so well in sort of a 40s setting, right? Like the classic. Mm-hmm. I mean, partly because it's about a newspaper guy, right? And like what newspapers are not that
relevant now. Now he's a blogger.
Now is it? Well, yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Like it can mm-hmm. that idea always seems to come back to, even in the Christopher Reeve films and Superman Returns. You know, Superman Returns, the Daily Planet looked like it came right out of the 40s.
Yeah,
you know? Gorgeous. I mean, there were screens and everything. There was modern technology, but the decor of the building itself and then the look,
it was the
90s. Art Deco look of
the 40s, the 90s, so
30s, 40s.
Oh God, it wasn't the 90s. Yeah.
So, and the Superman animated series, the Batman animated series have that look, the Art Deco look. And you know, even to a certain extent, Zack Snyder's Man of Steel, the Daily Planet had something of some.
I think Lois vestige is, of, I think some of their outfits, like they wore their vests definitely. And you know, stuff like that. But I wouldn't necessarily. I don't think the building necessarily shouted that.
Well, Planet building,
yeah,
interior. I mean,
yeah, no. Even then, like thinking of them like walking around at like Perry's office and stuff like that, it just
with the glass and everything. I mean. I guess what I'm getting at is I think that there are things that are sort of subtle. Maybe the wardrobe is a better example for Man of Steel. But I think there are certain pieces that are still somewhat holdovers from that. And I think whether it's direct or whether it's indirect, like because Fleischer influenced Burton, influenced Bruce Timm, influenced somebody else, I still think that influence is still there. And it's still felt to this day to a certain extent.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, where can the good people find us, Frank?
Well, they can go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And
those are both good places, Frank.
Good places to leave us reviews, too.
I do like reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love reviews. Especially for like
four or five stars would be awesome. Best,
No, we really appreciate that very much. If you guys could help us spread the word and do that. Also, you can tweet at us or tweet about us at Beer with Geeks is where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having conversations with you guys every day. I'm trying to keep up with that. And we had some great conversations from some people. So thank you guys very much. Feel free to tell us, you know, any show topics or things you like, things you enjoyed, any feedback, and we'll be happy to read it on the show. Had some great feedback just earlier today. You know, just pull back the curtain. We are recording in advance. We're recording a little bit in advance, and we had some nice feedback on our Lego episode. earlier today, which was nice to see. Sabina told us Legos equals awesome. Stepping on Legos equals so much pain. Oh God, the pain.
Yep. Oh yeah, it's so true.
It's very true.
It's so true, huh?
Oh. So yeah.
It's like reliving Home Alone.
Yeah.
If you want to act out Home Alone, just step on some Legos.
That's true. And our friend Brian also said, please, also in regards to the Lego episode, said, please address how Will Ferrell is sloppy with his overuse of Kregel while gluing everything together.
Yeah, there's a limited supply. Why does he just throw so it everywhere?
Kregel
yeah,
everywhere. We hear you, Brian. We couldn't agree more. But yeah, so that was those were some of our recent comments. Join the conversation there or email us, beerwithgeeks@gmail.com. And we'll be happy to read those on the show as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Any last thoughts?
Superman. Cheers.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. All character names, sound effects, and quotes are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Thought Bubble Audio Studios, unless otherwise indicated.